There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Welcome to today's WCN-TV program. We're broadcasting live, and it's Tuesday, November 18th, 2025. Got to give you the instructions here like I always do. Sorry. First off, if you're watching on Rumble, please like, share, and subscribe to our channel. It only takes a second to click the subscribe button, but that little gesture will really help us out. Likewise, please take a minute to share today's show link with your social media. And whether you're watching on WCN-TV or on Rumble, share that link. And if you're watching on WCNTV.net, if you're watching live, click the Join the Studio Audience button, and then you can comment, ask questions, and be with us as part of today's show. And today we have one of your favorite guests with us. Waiting in the wings is Doug Hagman. He'll be on with us. Doug is a credentialed investigator, multi-state licensed, certified in multiple forensic disciplines. He's also certified as a surveillance specialist and in criminal interview techniques. He's a former informational and operational asset for the FBI and US DOJ. He's also certified in cold case homicide investigation, including forensic pathology and prosecution preparation. And he writes an exclusive monthly investigative column for Wisconsin Christian News. But you probably know him best as the host of the Hagman Report that airs live every weekday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Also, can't forget about his books. He's the author of Stained by Blood, A Murder Investigation, and In the Dark of Night, Blood of the Innocent. We're still waiting on book number 3. I don't know where that is, but tell you what, folks, if you get these books, they are page-turners. You won't want to put them down. You can find Doug on his website, HagmanPI.com. All right, so Doug, sorry for taking so long on that. I appreciate you being patient. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for that nice introduction. I had some network instability. I'm not sure if it's on my end or whatever, but we can work through it. Thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Looks good. The only question I have, sorry to be doing this, is, oh, there we go. Okay. Well, Spencer, I have a little icon thing in the middle of Doug's picture on my screen. How do I get rid of that? Okay. All right. Sorry, folks. I'm figuring things out, too. All right. So today we're going to be talking about the new and growing communist threat in America and worldwide, really. But we're going to be talking about a lot more, too. People are feeling weird all over the country these days. They're uneasy, feeling like they're just kind of waiting for the next big disaster. People are full of anxiety and depression. And a lot of that has to do with the programming we're being fed through our constant exposure to media and our screens. Not this screen. This screen is okay. All right. So just so we know. A lot of what we're feeling is real, but at the same time, a lot of it is also theater designed to draw us in and keep us all on edge, because fear always makes it much easier to control people. But Doug, why don't we start off with your take on the current situation of socialism going mainstream here in America and not just among young people, like a lot of people think, but as I wrote in my radio commentary today, studies now show that 20% of baby boomers are now in favor of a socialist America. What's going on?
Rob, to your point, okay, that is, to your opening point, that is a product of programming. I believe this. You know, a lot of people today, they wake up with a feeling that something's not right. Sometimes, maybe, they have arguments, internal arguments in their head. Sometimes they even think, you know, man, that's something's not right. Something's wrong. Something is off. And that is being done by design to us right now. And I have a saying, from pills to pixels. And I say that because, and I don't know where that originated. So if I stole that from somebody, my apologies. But back when the Tavistock Institute became a thing back in the early 20th century, their whole purpose, or stated purpose, was to treat people with treated World War I veterans with shell shock. Now it's called PTSD. But instead, what they did was they found, and this is the key to pretty much everything going on today, they found that trauma creates this creates people to become more suggestible. Okay, and trauma and PTSD, if that's what you want to call it, negative things, it creates this suggestibility in one's mind. And I learned this through a whole lot of behavioral profiling courses, forensic behavioral profiling courses. So it's not, I mean, it's in the mainstream, but it's not really talked about in this context. And the context is this. What we're seeing today did not start, for example, with the advent of the internet, with the advent of TikTok, with the advent of social media, although they certainly have refined it and certainly are using this as a method of control. And that is this, and you can test this out yourself. If you go on your timeline on X or whatever, pick your social media platform, you will notice that the posts which you see are designed to make you feel fear, outrage, or some they're designed to create an emotional response within you, because emotion replaces any type of cognitive working, understanding, and reasoning. Okay, so you're now driven by an emotion, a very powerful, primal emotion. That drives your beliefs. And remember, belief is the driver of action. So this is why I would contend that we're seeing all of these boomers out there. One of the reasons why, but especially why we're seeing the younger generation, who always have a screen in front of their face. Because as you scroll through, and a lot of people don't realize this, the instruments, the cameras, especially, or the phones, they're watching you and also learning from you, your reaction. And you can see, I mean, it, when you are subjected, or if you ever sat in a room to interview or interrogate, or hey, even if you had if you raised teenagers and sat across from them, you can tell, for example.
I've interviewed and interrogated my teenagers when they were teenagers.
There you go. So you can gauge their responses to your question, and then sometimes, you know, you push some hot buttons. But regardless of that, you can see the dilation of pupils, the body language, and all of this. And it's both a science and an art, because you've really got to kind of pay attention, okay, because micro expressions and all that. But the bottom line is this. What we're seeing right now is this algorithm that is designed to keep people suspended in fear, emotion driven, throw out the logic, don't ask any questions, and just listen to us because we have a better way. And that was like what Tavistock did. And remember the history of Tavistock, like I said, you know, they invented, for example, the campaign that was behind the woman's movement, all of the women's movements. even from, you know, where cigarettes became freedom torches. And that came through Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew. And they were all involved in this really weird kind of conglomerate within the Tavistock, or associated with the Tavistock. So they have now, what they have done, these elite controllers, you've got to look at this a little bit objectively and without any political bias, which is really difficult. However, the political bias does exist, and it exists on the left, but it's also embraced by the right. And they want us to think, okay, our enemy is who? It's the leftists, which is true. But they want the infighting, because a lot of the leftist organizations have people on the right supporting them. So the bottom line is this. Again, from pills to pixels. So from the drugs used during all of the MKUltra program, mind programming experimentation, the crazy stuff that went on, it's never stopped. It just got more refined. And they're now using pixels to program us and to get us to act in ways we would not ordinarily act. And that's what's happening today. So that's why I would contend, that's why, in addition to some other things, that's why we saw New York City elect as a communist, a Muslim communist, 24 years after the towers were destroyed, regardless of what you think of 9/11. Just think of that. If we would have talked about this 24 years ago, that you would have a communist Muslim as a mayor in New York City, you would have said, you know, I'm going to smack you. And rightfully so. So the bottom line is this historical, this what we're seeing today, it's not just suddenly. It was gradually building up, and then all of a sudden, that's where we're at. I like to talk, so.
No, that was well said. But, you know, it seems like it's all meant to keep us confused.
Oh, yeah.
It's a maze of confusion when you're looking at your screens. First of all, you know, just as an example, the left was, you know, they loved Elon Musk and his green energy thing. And then Musk joined MAGA, and all of a sudden they're burning Tesla plants. Okay. Now Musk has become a Nazi. And then now Musk and Trump have had a falling out. Okay. So now we have to pick. And then now Trump has had a falling out with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Okay. So once again, it's nothing but confusion. And to me, it's all theater. I don't know what you think, but it's.
No, it is.
It's a huge distraction. It's theater.
Yes. And again, what we're seeing play out is that that process of the algorithms directing our outrage. And we saw this, especially after national traumas. We saw this after 9/11, but not to the extent we see it today. The outrage-driven reactions to agree with a foreign war, agree with attacking, Iraq, Afghanistan, all of these, you know, pushing these foreign wars and getting otherwise rational, sensible people behind these, as well as the surveillance apparatus, which now exists in the U.S., which are being used by the very people who want to control us, enslave us, and ultimately kill us. So this is all by design. It's all by plan. And here we are.
Okay. So you mentioned in your notes to me, you mentioned the symptoms, which you had included rainbow flags, attack on American traditions, the destruction of the natural family, immorality, lawlessness, and outright hatred for American history, heritage, and culture. You mentioned in those notes that there's a much deeper and more sinister agenda, which is spiritual warfare. Right. And we're going to get into that more deeply as we get into the show. But if you would, just give us a brief intro on that here. What's the spiritual aspect to all this?
So if you want just the bottom line up front here, I can do that. My research, my investigation, I used to say that communism was the objective to create the surveillance state, to create the, essentially what people would think is the Antichrist system. which they're not wrong, but communism is only one of the stepping stones to the ultimate objective, and that is to create that system of the Antichrist indeed. And that is for the ultimate control and enslavement and capturing of people's souls. I mean, they got your body, they got your mind, and now they're going after your soul. And that's the ultimate objective. And we saw this especially, I got to say this, we saw this in the aftermath of the Charlie Kirk assassination, and we're seeing it happen. We're seeing it all play out today.
Yeah, okay. So let's get into the history of all this. How far back does this creeping socialism go?
Well, you know, you can take it back to forever. I mean, you could take it back to the beginning of time, the beginning of mankind, in terms of the spiritual war, and as well as you should. But I think what we're looking at right now is something a little bit more. We can take it back to the mid 20th century, for example. The threat recognition of the mid 20th century, it was amazing to see that, you know, there were laws against communism, there were laws against Marxism. In 1940, the Smith Act, the Alien Registration Act, made it illegal to advocate, abet, or teach the violent overthrow of the U.S. government. People can look this up. Again, 1940 Smith Act. And this was challenged. It was upheld in Dennis v. U.S. in 1951, Yates v. U.S. in 1957, but on and on. So it's still in effect, but it is rarely invoked today. And you got to ask yourself why. And then, of course, people are very familiar with the McCarran Internal Security Act of 1950, which required communist organizations to register with the Attorney General. You know, those requirements were ultimately struck down, Albertson v. Subversion and Activities Control Board, in 1980 or 1965 or 85, I'm not sure. I think it was 65. And then, of course, the Communist Control Act of 1954, we saw the outlawing the existence of the Communist Party USA. And they classified CPUSA as an instrument of a conspiracy. They stripped it of CPUSA. They stripped it of their legal rights and privileges. They criminalized membership being a member of the Communist Party USA. That was declared unconstitutional by a couple of different laws, a couple of different cases that went before the Supreme Court in 1973. And others, but it's rarely enforced. Some parts of that still exist, rarely enforced. The Communist Party of USA still exists today, and they participate in our elections. So the warning signs early were early on, and we should have seen that. And of course, what we see, and this is a big pet peeve of mine, McCarthyism. People say, well, this is McCarthyism. And that's a reference to Senator Joe McCarthy, not to be confused with the House Un-American Un-American Activities Commission. Senator Joe McCarthy had, of course, identified numerous communists who infiltrated within our government. And that whole structure was absolutely accurate. Now, there was a little bit of embellishment by McCarthy in the responses to his detractors. And McCarthy now had some issues later in his short, brief term dealing with those attacks. So ultimately, they discredited him because of those issues he had. He liked to drink a lot. But then again, he had, some would say, well, he had reason to, for crying out loud.
He was from Wisconsin.
Yes, exactly. And I love it. So the bottom line is, in my view, is this. We've had plenty of warnings, but you know, all of this developed and all of this kind of percolated for a long time. And then what we saw in the 60s, the counterculture, that was a product of the attack on the family, pushing of perverse sexuality, perverse ideology, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and all that. That was a planned event. That was orchestrated and underwritten by the intelligence agencies, specifically the CIA here in this country. So you had communist ideologues and spiritually bankrupt individuals leading our intelligence services in the 60s that brought us counterculture, which led to where we're at today, the loosening of the morals, you know, a Obergefell decision, the Planned Parenthood, the whole issue with the killing of the unborn and celebrating that as a sacrifice, basically. So all of everything that we're seeing today, you can see it again. You can see the building blocks of everything if you look deep enough and hard enough. But people don't like to do that. They like the headlines. They like the rage bait on the timelines. They like to say, well, you know, the left is doing this. Yes, but why? And why isn't anyone doing anything about it? And that's what I see as being a big problem. So the communist ideology has really taken root in this country. And that's, you know, that kind of gives you, I think, a historical overview outline to bring us to where we are today. And the tactics today, I'll just close with this, are an outgrowth of what happened, you know, all throughout that time, the campus radicalization, which, by the way, you've got to look at what's going on now in the context of the national trauma and the murder of Charlie Kirk, the indoctrination, the corporate ESG mandates, border policies. All of these elements are all part of a larger, they're pieces of a larger mosaic. But yet people, again, the blinders kind of are directing us to a look at the lesser picture as opposed to the larger picture. I'll be quiet now.
Well, okay, so I did a research article on this, and it seems like it's usually during the hard economic times that people tend to gravitate more towards socialism. It started to gain popularity during the Great Depression and other times in our history. But, you know, we know about 1963, the current communist goals for America were read into the congressional record in 1963. Three of those goals included taking control of one or both political parties. And I think we can all agree that's not been done. Taking control of the schools, that's been done, and taking control of the churches, that has been doubly done. So all of that's been accomplished for a while now, but when do you think we really started to see the fruit of this slow indoctrination start to flourish on college campuses, in the economy, and in their churches?
Well, you know, I'm sure people can argue the time, but I would stipulate this. In my view, we saw the refinement and the product of this communist ideology from the beginning in the 60s. But really, you've got to take a look at the advent of Obama. When Obama came into office,
that's what I was trying to get you to say, because that was the fundamental transformation of America, and he wasn't kidding.
No, exactly. And people, I really believe that he is a construct of the intelligence community, the ideological construct of the, or product of anti-capitalist, anti-Christian, the pro-hatred, pro-outrage, pro-perverse agenda that is the foundation for the spiritual bankruptcy that we're seeing today, whether it's the cross-dressers or the furries or this or that. You got to look to really when the masks came off, and that was with the advent of Obama. And but Obama just didn't suddenly appear. If I can just really quick look at my notes, Obama, again, as a construct, there are so many things that in his early years that you got to question. He was an associate of Bill Ayers, of course, where he launched his campaign from.
Can I just interrupt?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is a story that was told on the Crosstalk program on VCY America back at that time. Apparently, Obama, during his college days, was living with Bel Air's parents. And he was one day, this story was told by the local mailman, the postman, who ran into Obama on the sidewalk and had a short conversation with him. And, you know, what are you doing? What are your plans for the future? And Obama said at that time, as a 19 or 20 year old, I'm going to be president. And there was no question. It had already been determined. So,
oh, yeah. I mean, again, this is all planned. As a matter of fact, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, they babysat on occasion Malia and Natasha Obama. So that tells you how close they were. So people who would say, well, that's just really not, you know, that can't be. Well, yeah, it can. You know, again, you go back and look, William Ayers, for example, Bill Ayers, his father, Thomas Ayers, a close friend of Obama's communist mentor, Frank Marshall Davis. Davis worked at the communist sympathizing Chicago Defender with Vernon Jarrett, who became the father-in-law of Valerie Jarrett, this Iranian-born leftist communist person. Obama chose Valerie Jarrett, for example, as his closest White House advisor. Jarrett served as the CEO of the Habitat Company, which was a management company of public housing in Chicago, very leftist. The Habitat Company received millions of dollars from the Illinois State Legislature, and they misallocated the money. They pocketed the money, kind of like BLM. And what happened with the public housing, certain public housing, well, they had to demolish it. Valerie Jarrett also worked for the city of Chicago, who hired, Valerie Jarrett hired Michelle Obama, or Robinson, later Obama, who worked at the Sidney Austin law firm with former fugitive and from the FBI, of course, Bernadine Dorn. Barack Obama was also hired at the same law firm for one summer. Dorn, as I said, married to Bill Ayers. And she hid at during her wanted period, she hid at an FBI or hid from the FBI at a San Francisco marina, along with a guy by the name of Donald Warden, who changed his name, interestingly, to Khalid al-Mansour. And this al-Mansour character was a mentor of the Black Panther Party founders, Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. And he was a close associate of Louis Farrakhan, Nation of Islam leader. He was a financial advisor to a Saudi prince who was a large donor to Harvard. And Obama, recall that Obama received a letter of recommendation from Percy Sutton, the attorney for Malcolm X. Sutton, who was also involved with Harvard, the attorney, that is. And Sutton knew this guy by the name of Tom Maboya, who was a Kenyan politician, who was also a close friend of Barack Hussein Obama Sr., who met Obama Sr., met Malcolm X in Kenya. So you've got this incestuous, this whole incestuous thing that involves money and power, to skip many, many points. If you follow up to his college days, like you said, yes, he did live with the Ayers Dorn people. But also during his time alone, he had several foreign Muslim roommates. It's really interesting how his college days, Occidental College, Columbia University. He moved to Chicago ultimately to work for Industrial Areas Foundation, which is an organization that was founded by Saul Alinsky. And of course, Saul Alinsky is the author of Rules for Radicals. Now, the call, you got to understand too, recall that the Hillary Clinton's thesis at Wellesley College was on Saul Alinsky's book. And the incestuous nature too, when you look at Obama's work during that time period, Obama made $25,000 working at the IAF, and I'm trying to think what IAF stands for, My bad. I'm sorry. Industrial Areas Foundation. Sorry about that. So he made $25,000 a year at IAF, which was funded by a grant from the Woods Fund, which was funded by the Woods family, which also owns Sahara Coal, which provided coal to the Commonwealth Edison, and their CEO was Bill Ayers' father, Thomas Ayers, whose son, William, served on the board of the Woods Fund along with Obama. You can't get any more incestuously infiltrated than that. And we, of course, Obama was associated with Democratic Socialists of America in the 1980s. He worked with the DSA. He worked with Socialists International. And through that, he met numerous people, including Carl Davidson, who traveled to Cuba during the Vietnam War to sabotage the U.S. war effort, and on and on. So you can connect, you can draw direct lines between the communist agenda, SDS, Democratic Socialists of America, Obama, Clinton, to everyone today, pretty much on the left in power. I hope I didn't bore you with that.
No, you didn't. You know, pretty much every administration you can probably say has been corrupt, going back to, I don't know when. Go back as far as you want. They're all corrupt. But there was something inherently evil when Obama took office. And he said he was going to fundamentally transform America, and that's exactly what happened. We didn't have racial division. We didn't have transgenderism. We didn't have homosexual marriage. We didn't have any of this stuff. We didn't have little kids thinking they were cats and schools providing litter boxes, and we didn't have old men thinking they're little girls. You know, something major happened when he took office, and we have not recovered, and I don't think we will. But go ahead.
No, I mean, see, and that's part and parcel, because you have the weaponization of sexuality, the attack on the biblical nuclear family. All of this is part of the process. You know, again, this university college indoctrination, the communist goals that you mentioned infiltrate the schools. Well, the universities as well, the higher learning, they're not obviously places of learning, they're places of indoctrination, which is why Charlie Kirk represented such a terrible threat to the planners, the people who have absolutely built this infrastructure. You could not allow him to continue. He was subsequently silenced. Now it's coming out where the alleged shooter is part of the whole furry perverse ideology, and has some really odd things. Again, the alleged shooter, whatever you think of what happened to Charlie Kirk, whatever you think of the events, please think bigger, think beyond that for the moment, think beyond that and look at the results. The results, we saw something happen after that I don't think we've seen ever. And that is the hatred that was unleashed against the political, or against the ideological movement that was embraced and advanced by Charlie Kirk. You saw things, the hatred against those people who embraced moral foundations, biblical foundations, because of Charlie Kirk, were marginalized. And it was so obvious. But why was that? Was that, you know, again, I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, was this nature or nurture? I mean, were people born with this? No. This is that spiritual the push, that spiritual attack and indoctrination. Those who have been indoctrinated, those who have been exposed to this, the things that we see on social media, the things we see given to us on a timeline, that is pushing that agenda directly into many people's brains. And of course, as I said, you know, they develop beliefs that, hey, it's good to be taught. Not so much. And belief is a driver of action. And that's kind of where we're at today. So, and then, of course, the rise of again, whatever you think, this is, it just blew my mind when I was watching this. This anti-Semitic, anti-Jew, anti-Israel thing that developed after this. Don't look at, look, that is, has all of the hallmarks of a psychological operation.
Okay? Absolutely, yeah.
Regardless of where you fall, if you are arguing that point, in my view, if you are engaged in that argument, period, on any side, you are advancing that psyop, the psychological operation, which operates off of four main principles. And that is to divert your focus or divert your attention. That is to cause anger, bring authority figures or kind of influencers into the equation to take sides, for example. And there's nothing good that can come out of that, nothing. And that's what we're seeing today. People are falling for this. And who benefits by this? It are the very people who say that, hey, man, look, you know, America, we need to save this country. We need to, for example, we need to keep our spiritual roots. They're taking part. Look, I get it. I understand both sides of the argument, but that's not really that. I mean, I understand you're both sides are being played and exploited and used for a much darker agenda. And again, I'll be quiet now.
No, I absolutely get it. And there are days I just have to turn my news feed off. And I take every story that comes through and I just delete because I'm too busy and I know it's all theater and it's, you know, the next thing and tomorrow it'll be something else. If it's really important, I'll get multiple notifications. If it's not, if I'm busy, it's just, I don't have time for it. So, and I think we need to start examining what comes across our screens a little bit more closely because we are being played.
Oh,
so
yeah, and folks, Wisconsin Christian News has got just a tremendously great number of authors and writers, columns, contributors. I mean, it's fantastic, and WCN TV as well. Great guests. Go back through and look at some of the. I mean, to me, news like yours and what appears on this channel is what's important, as opposed to the rage bait, the hijacking emotions to create this false sense of purpose, which, you know, dopamine is a great the rush for dopamine is something that has been long studied, and it is a part of this outrage that has been really pushed upon us, and it makes us think we got to take a side, we have to be right, we got to be first, we got to engage in this debate, when in fact none of that's true. So
no, just take a breath. You know, even a lot of the Christian news outlets that I get a news feed from, they're really good. Some of them are really good at clickbait and theater and making stories where there is no story, directing the narrative. It's really sad. But anyway, before we get too far ahead here, anyone in our audience, any questions or comments? Ray, come on in.
Yeah, Doug, I like your opinion on this. A little off topic, but I just read 4-27-1 voting for the Epstein files to be released. I'm thinking that there's 427-1. That's astronomical that they would actually vote to that number, knowing that I bet you a lot of them are on that list. I would think, I'm not sure, but what's your take on that? And I know that's the argument between President Trump and Marjorie Taylor Greene, that he's trying to keep a kibosh on this whole thing. What's your take on that?
It's going to be interesting to see what's released. You know, what I know they voted for this release, but do they know what's going to be released? Are we going to, of course, it was, you know, the one dissenter, I think, was Clay Higgins, right? But anyway, and he was concerned about the exposure of victims' names or people's names being referenced within the documents that didn't do anything wrong, witnesses and such. But what's my opinion? You know, look, that's more, to me, that's more theater. When you have a vote like that, that's a lot. People should be asking questions, but it really, the proof is going to be, in my view, the proof will be in the documents that we'll see. And are they going to be nothing but black lines, you know?
Or, yeah, it's going to be a bunch of black lines with names inked out.
A nothing burger.
Yeah. You know. But again, you know, when you have votes that lopsided, you can't look. You can't even get a handful of those the lawmakers to agree on what, you know, what color the sky is. Okay, so, or the grass is. So you got to ask. I think, you know, what's going on here? What's the deal? Is it, so? I think a lot of that is performative in nature.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. Let's see what actually comes out, if anything. Anyone else in the audience, questions or comments?
I was going to say something.
Oh, yep. Come on in, Craig.
So,
by the way, Craig is our guest next week. So,
I put this in the chat. So 1963, a lot of things happened. You remember Martin Malachi, right? His book and Windswept House, which was a novel, wasn't verbatim, but they picked June 29th, 1963, where there was the enthronement in the Vatican of Lucifer. Okay, in February, that's when the Abilene School District decision was, where you can't have the Lord's Prayer in schools, was taken out. And then it was earlier in that year when the 45 communist things were written into Congress, which you referenced. All this happened in 1963, okay? And so that was a very pivotal point in the spirit realm. So there's a whole lot to that thing. I'll just tell you some of the stuff that I researched out after I got onto that, and I realized in 63 a lot of things changed. There was a dual ritual in a Catholic church over here in southern South Carolina where they did some pretty bad things, I think, at the same time. I was able to find out where that church was, and we went there on June 29th, 2025, and we broke that curse. And that's one of the reasons why I did Refiner's Fire, Rob, is I thought I was done. I thought, wow, you know, this is Satan's beachhead into the American church through this Catholic church. And, like 2 weeks later, like I couldn't sleep still. And the Lord got me up and had me write that prayer. You know, that's what we're going to talk about next week. But this whole 1963 thing had a huge spiritual aspect. It was a big push. And what's really interesting about this is there was a brand new pope that year, okay, just like we had this year. And John F. Kennedy was in Europe at this particular time, and he swung by and met the current pope. I can't remember his name that year. But he met that man, and I don't think the Pope actually was a part of this ritual, but I do think that he ended up becoming the blood sacrifice because he died on November 22nd, 1963. Okay, I think that was the blood sacrifice over the nation to perpetuate the spiritual pushing, what you're talking about, basically, over the last 62 years, what's happened in our nation. So yeah. That's all hypothetical. I'm just telling you. But
well, you know, once again, just like they always do, they told us what they were going to do, and they tell us ahead of time what they're going to do, and they always do it. So they tell us what they're going to do, we ignore them every time, and then they do it.
The thing in
there, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about COVID? They told us what they're going to do, and then they did it. We ignored them, and then they did it. we can go down the line. I don't know why we don't. When someone tells you who they are, believe them the first time. Okay, just okay. Betty, come on in.
I'll just make it quick. You know, Doug, you're really nailing it. And I tell you what, Obama, he really messed up the military, because when he took office and we had those diversity trainings, it was like, we're in for our trouble. So, and he did marry Michael LaVon Robinson, July, and he was born in July in 1964. And you try to tell people that and they look at you stupid, you know? So I said, we've had a homosexual couple in that office, and they go, oh no, Michelle's a beautiful lady. And it's like, lady, my butt. Where'd you get that from? But yep, you're nailing it. Everything that you said, you're nailing it. You're so awesome. Thanks.
Well, thank you. And you know, to your point, I interviewed Larry Sinclair on air and off air many, many times. And in late 1999, specifically around that time period, Obama allegedly, purportedly engaged in homosexual activities and cocaine snorting in the back of a limo with Larry Sinclair. Now, Larry Sinclair claims that he was contacted in late 2007. This is important, by Donald Young, who was the homosexual choir director at Obama's Chicago church, who shared information with Sinclair about Obama. And Young was murdered on December 23rd, 2007, just weeks after Larry Bland, which is another homosexual member of that church, was murdered as well. Now, both murders happened to, well, they remain unsolved. So in 2008, and this is what put Larry Sinclair on our radar, 2008, Sinclair held a press conference to discuss those claims and his claims of with Obama. And he was right away, he was picked up. He was arrested right after the press conference based on a warrant issued by Delaware attorney, guess who? Bo Biden. Huh. The son of Joe Biden. Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, but even more important than that, to your point, is Obama has done so much damage by insinuating certain individuals into cabinet positions during his tenure, but also during the Otto Penn, 4 years of President Otto Penn. Obama was the middle manager behind that to throw the various people into the mix, the ideologies. It was Obama's third term, Biden was. So having said all of that, what we didn't get, thankfully, in 2016 with the election of Hillary, we got arguably as much or as bad as, or perhaps worse, with Obama. Through the marionette style administration of Biden. So there we have it. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
And I also believe that Obama's one, because he's part of the Muslim Brotherhood. And so we're getting a lot of Muslims into office, which has taken over a lot of our cities.
Amen. Yeah, again, you know, people are recoil in horror, but look, I've written about this in Wisconsin Christian News, that we identified Islamic enclaves following 2001, following 9/11. I did a lot of investigation. I found many, one in particular, this Islamic paramilitary training compound at the foot of the Catskills outside of New York City. I reported on this. I had video. I had photographs. I had all of this evidence of these paramilitary training. We even, in fact, a few things did survive the FBI confiscation. And that was a picture of a school bus that was being used as a training prop or a training device for the terrorists there under Pakistani cleric, Mubarak Ali Jalani, who, by the way, according to the FBI visited my house one night in 2008 after our reports were submitted and then made public. The FBI said, hey, you might want to increase your security because, well, Mubarak just did a big write-up on you in the Islamic Post, which translated into a fatwa, and he said, yeah, you got some issues there, you might want to protect yourself. So instead of the FBI acting on the information, the FBI said, man, you know what, we're going to form this outreach. And that was the beginning, really, at the beginning of the Obama era FBI. And I'll tell you what, that still smarts, it still stings. When we look at all of the effort we put in to expose this, we expose paramilitary training in Buffalo, New York. In other places. So we showed exactly what was happening in Buffalo, where they would buy them. They bought a mosque. These Islamic groups, they'd buy a mosque. They would buy the property around the mosque to protect the activities there. So when you drove on the street, everyone stopped stopped the activities at the mosque because they didn't recognize you as anyone that belonged there. So again, hampering our surveillance efforts. But really, the FBI at that time, beginning with Obama, actually at the end of George Bush's tenure, but beginning with Obama, it really made things, really changed things in terms of the Islamic spread, as well as the perversity in all matters, the evolution of Marxist tactics, the cultural Marxism, critical race theory, DEI, woke capitalism, the DEI initiatives, Maoist struggles, the Marx-Mao, introduction of this whole thing. So the whole process really took, in my view, at least looking at it from a 30,000-foot view, really took hold with Obama. So,
Doug, if I remember correctly, you turned all this information over on your investigation to the FBI.
I did.
Yeah. And the next day they blew up your car.
Well, it wasn't the next day. It was a few weeks later. It was one of the cars that you saw the key, but there's a key fob that locked the doors. Simple as that. And press the key fob thing to unlock the car. And I don't know what, I mean, I look, the car was so badly damaged that they said, we're not sure. They didn't look actually, but they said, this doesn't happen normally, for blow up and stuff.
Yeah.
So the police said, who do you have as, who are your enemies? I mean, did you cheat on somebody, or did you pick up some woman and some, a wife of a mafia boss? He said, no, I mean, I'll tell you, if you want enemies, of course, they didn't want to hear that. The bottom line was, we're not going to investigate. We don't care. Car fires happen, and good luck, and God bless. So,
well, the photo I saw looked more than just a car fire. It was bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting before we run out of time here, I guess people are struggling financially, and I believe they've destroyed our economy purposely. That's another issue to drive us into digital currency and whatnot. But socialism promises a fairer distribution of wealth and resources. And that's really the draw. People like the idea of, government provided healthcare, education, housing, social safety nets, shorter work hours, higher wages. Okay.
Sounds nice.
But in reality, after COVID, employers were begging for help. They were begging for employees. Nobody wanted to work because they were still getting their free stuff. So that's what happens with socialism. You get your free stuff. Why would you possibly go to work if you're going to get your free stuff? I mean, I would, but most people don't. So after that ended, now you go to the fast food place, and where they used to have six or eight people working, now they have two. And you sit there, one of them cooks and one of them runs the window, and you sit there in line and you wait until they finish cooking one order and giving it out the window to the next before they even take your order. So, yeah, you got your higher wages, but instead of eight people working, now you got two. Is that not what socialism does? Is that not what we're dealing with?
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, socialism is really a stepping stone to communism, which, of course, people will argue that all day long, but they're not, to me, they're not looking at the big picture. But what we're seeing today with the fight between the have and the have-nots, if you go back and see how we got here, the attack on everything, it's a complex issue to really discuss. But when you look at removing industry, manufacturing from the U.S. to overseas, why? Because of restrictive regulations by the government or the greed of certain corporations. I get that. But bringing them back would solve a lot of employment issues, but it's going to take a lot of time, which I get why. And I'm in favor, for example, of tariffs. I understand if you historically, and that's, people are going to disagree and they're going to say, yeah, you idiot. I'm no economist, but I do know that if we can bring back the manufacturing base of the U.S., if we can have our for crying out loud, our medications, we're getting them from China. What's wrong with that? Okay, so all of this is really, in my view, what at least the thought process by President Trump is to fight the socialist agenda, to fight the communist agenda, to bring back manufacturing, to be self-reliant. Socialism is nothing but relying on other people for your basic necessities. And I'll tell you what, somebody's got to pay for those. It doesn't work. You can vote yourself into socialism, communism, but you're going to have to fight your way out. And that's where we're at today.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are socialist countries that these enthusiasts can go to if they like. Take your pick. When you see some rioters on the street demanding socialism, ask them, you know, what do you prefer, Venezuela or North Korea? You know, see how many take you up on that. They've been taught to hate America, and yet they're not going to Venezuela or North Korea. They're staying here. And
They want to bring it here. It's a problem. You see Cuban and Mexican flags, Palestinian flags everywhere. We'll go over there. Well, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, and the old saying was during the election time, if you have an American flag outside your house, everyone knows who you're voting for, you know. So, I mean, you can't get more obvious and ridiculous than that. But anyway, in my research, I found that there are government officials in 40 of our 50 states now who are open socialists, and in 40 states. And really, it starts at the local level. So now we're talking local level in the mayor of New York and the mayor of Seattle. From sea to shining sea, we have socialism. So final thoughts, Doug. We're down to about a minute here.
Final thoughts is, folks, please support Wisconsin Christian News. And I say this from the heart. Look, you guys, Rob, you carry a huge load on your back. The publication itself to me is so important. I love it. I read cover to cover. It is so important. We got to get that message out there. So please support Rob's efforts. Support Wisconsin Christian News. And you know what? Anyone watching this, please share this and other guest appearances, please, because look, we need to fight. And in order to fight, we need to expose certain things, but we also have to expose people to the truth. Rob and Wisconsin Christian News, all of the writers, they have the handle on the truth. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you. And Doug is on 9 p.m., right? 9 Eastern?
9 o'clock.
At HagmanPI.com.
Is that Hagman Report? HagmanReport.com is easier for people to remember. So 9 to 11 tonight, beginning night, Paul McGuire is going to come on with me.
Okay. Well, I watch you on Rumble, so it's just easier for me because I got you saved on there. So I use the app on my screen. So anyway, we will be back next week with, as you know, Craig Mickle will be joining us. He's one of our friends, mutual friends of Coach Dave. Share the program, and I got to get up and be on the road at 3 a.m. tomorrow to start delivering newspapers. I'm also the paper boy, but it's not like you think. I don't ride a bike. It's huge loads, one after another. So anyway, we'll see you next week. God bless. Bye.